Shrivaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 28, Krishna Rescues Nanda Maharaj. We're doing text 4 and 5. I'll read text 4 and then we'll do text 5 responsively. Praptam viksya rishikesham lokapala saparyaya mahatya pujat vaha tadarshana mahotsava. Seeing that the Lord, Rishikesh, had arrived, the demigod Varuna worshipped him with elaborate offerings. Varuna was in a state of great jubilation upon seeing the Lord, and he spoke as follows. So text 5. Shri Varuna Vacha. Adya me nibrito deho. Dvaivarto digata prabho. Tvatpada bhajo bhagavan. Avapu param advana. Shri Varuna Vacha. Adya me nibrito deho. Vaivarto digata prabho. Tvatpada bhajo bhagavan. Avapu param advana. Shri Varuna Vacha. Adya me nibrito deho. Vaivarto digata prabho. Tvatpada bhajo bhagavan. Avapu param advana. Shri Varuna Vacha. Shri Varuna said, Adya, today, may, by me, Nibrita, is carried successfully. Deha, my material body. Adya, today, Eva, indeed, Artha, the goal of life. Adhigata is experienced. Prabho, O Lord. Tvat, your. Pada, the lotus feet. Bhaja, those who serve. Bhagavan, O Supreme Personality. Avapu, have achieved. Param, the state of transcendence. Advana,
Advana
of the path of material existence. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Sri Varuna said, "Now my body has fulfilled its function. Indeed, now the goal of my life is achieved. O Lord, those who accept your lotus feet, O personality of Godhead, can transcend the path of material existence." Varuna ecstatically exclaims here that since he has now seen the infinitely gorgeous body of Lord Krishna, the trouble of assuming a material body has now been supremely justified. Indeed, the artha, the goal or real value of Varuna's life, has now been achieved. Because Lord Krishna's form is transcendental, those who accept his lotus feet go beyond the boundary of material existence, and thus only the spiritually unaware would presume that the Lord's lotus feet are material. Om Gyana Pimrandisha, Gananjana Salakaya, Chakshu Nimitanina, Tasma Sri Gave Noha, Panchako Paturvischa, Kripasindivivicha, Patitano Pavanivyo, Vaishnavivya, Muna Maha. I thought just before we begin discussing this verse to just mention a couple of things. I feel like I haven't been here in Malatra very much recently. After coming back from India, I had two trips up to Atlanta and Tennessee, and then this last weekend I was in New Vrindavan. I thought I'd just mention a few of the things that are going on in different parts of our ISKCON world. Sometimes we don't hear too much or wonder what's happening with other temples and centers, and so these are some of the areas in my GBC zone that I regularly visit. And just had short visits to most of the places here. I spent a little more time in New Vrindavan. But in Atlanta, they're actually doing very nicely. Several new devotees have been made in the last year, actually getting new Western devotees as well as Indian devotees are showing up, and they have a couple who have really taken to book distribution. So their book distribution is up about at least over 100% over last year, so they're doing really well in that. And then I went up to the Nashville area. There's actually a suburb of Nashville, Murfreesboro. Many of you know the devotees there, Nita Guru Sundar. And what's remarkable there is that they have just a preaching program that's in Nita Guru Sundar's home, and it's usually every Friday night. We had it Saturday for some reason this week, but it's been going on almost without fail every week for 25 years since they came there about 1987. So a really great example of just steady preaching, and many devotees come, and you know, several devotees have been made just through that program that goes on in such a regular way. Then Murray Sevak is our farm in Tennessee. It's of course very small and struggled a lot in recent years, but it's doing very, very well now. Gaudi Prabhu, who you all know from Alachua, is the temple president there, and there's a few devotees, about six devotees staying there. They really have a very energetic agriculture and cow program for having just a few devotees. They're milking two or three cows, I believe. Anyway, the prasadam is always overwhelmed with all sorts of milk products and curd and everything, so it's always very, very nice there. And they have a very nice mood, a lot of kirtan festivals, and they go out and do different programs. You know, they always go up to the Bonnaroo, that big, whatever it is, rock festival thing every year, and have their booths and tables there. And they usually bring back a couple devotees every time they go. Most of them don't stay, but some do, you know. So it's always a really nice preaching opportunity. And, of course, it was very beautiful this time of year. They actually have fall up there, you know, remember that, where the leaves change and stuff? It's a something we don't experience here so much, but very beautiful time of year there. So I went up there for the Govardhan Puja Festival the weekend before, and there were about 50 devotees came from all different places in Tennessee and Alabama. Actually, I was in Alabama. I went to Janmashtami. They had a big program there in Tuscaloosa, and we have two preaching centers in Alabama, in Birmingham and Tuscaloosa. And they have weekly programs. They also have a book table they go out on regularly in Tuscaloosa, which is, of course, where the University of Alabama is. So it's nice preaching. Now, most of our devotees there are Indian body, you know, and a lot of them are like graduate students and, you know, who go to the universities there. But they're very, very enthusiastic and dynamic. and two or three devotees now have become initiated, so very serious devotees, and really doing a nice job developing the preaching there. Last weekend I was in New Vrindavan. We had our semi-annual board meetings we have there. We actually have two boards in New Vrindavan. One is the ISKCON of New Vrindavan. Another board is called Eco Vrindavan. What they did is about 15 years ago, they split off about 600 acres, which was the pasturing and the cows, and which is really meant, and that corporation was meant for just taking care of the cows primarily in the agriculture. Anyway, there's the two different groups, and we meet together, and a very good relationship is developed, working very closely together with the two boards. And so we had 3 days of meetings, and one thing that was really nice is we began by hearing reports from all the different departments in New Vrindavan, and I think many of us were very almost surprised, and in a very, very good way, about how much has been going on, very, very dynamic activities. There's quite a few new people who have kind of joined the management and new department heads, as well as continuing some of the older ones, and there's just a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm, and a lot of things are really going forward. If any of you have been there recently, you probably noticed the whole lodge has been renovated. Those upstairs rooms, which used to look like about a 1936 Boy Scout barracks or something, they actually look like motel rooms now. They're very, very nicely done. You know, everything's been completely remodeled, and new furniture, new beds, everything. It's actually very, very nice. People actually like to come and stay there now. So it's... What's that? Yeah, they did a lot of remodeling there, and it's the problem with a place like New Vrindavan is you pour in monies places where you don't even notice. You know, like we've had to do so much work on renovating the wells, they have their own like sewer plant there. You know, they have their own, it's actually a complete facility. You know, so you have to replace, you know, these tanks, which are like $30,000, and you know, so much goes into just keeping up the infrastructure, you know, in such a large, you know, sort of spread out community like that. But, you know, things like, you know, replacing the roofs. You know, after 30 years, buildings deteriorate, so there's been a lot of work put into that. Also, the restaurant was completely remodeled, and it's very, very nice, very attractive, and they also improved the menu. And so that was very nice. We went there every evening for prasadam, and it was quite good. So if you go up there, definitely take advantage of the new facilities and restaurant and like that. They've been very active putting on festivals. Of course, the Festival of Inspiration has been there for a number of years. They put on this 24-hour kirtan regularly that a lot of people from here have gone up to. And this is their second year they did the Festival of Colors. And they increased their attendance 3 times from the first year to the second. So I think it's very encouraging to us. You know, our first year was really nice, but, you know, not really large in terms of the number of people that came. But New Vrindavan experienced that by the second year, when word got out and you started your advertising a little ahead, they increased tripled. So they had about, 3,000 to 4,000 people there. Very, very successful, and they're planning on doing those kind of festival programs in different cities around the area. So anyway, a lot going on there, very dynamic, a very nice mood of the devotees. And our temple president, Jai Krishna Prabhu, is from Switzerland, came there, almost been there 3 years, and he's starting to really take hold, and he's a very, very experienced manager. He was very successful in the professional world, and retired, became a devotee, he was like an MBA, you know, so he's doing very, very well there managing. And interestingly, he brought his cousin, Bhakta Joseph, over to run the Congregational Development Program, you know, their donor program. And Joseph had been like the top head of the whole fundraising department for Greenpeace for a number of years. So, you know, one of those kind of very liberal groups, but he's very, very experienced in nonprofit management and fundraising. So, you know, really added a lot to it, and they've actually been, even though they've had some turnover, they have a really nice crew now, and they've actually increased like 30% over what they did last year. So many, many successes there. And it was just kind of enlivening to see our different temples and seeing the things that are going on by the, you know, the hard work and the dedication of devotees, and who are very, very, very dedicated to helping Srila Prabhupada spread this Krishna conscious movement. So just wanted to mention some of those things. Thank you. all glories to our ISKCON devotees all over the country, doing so much. It's kind of nice. I can sort of show up and say, "Gee, you're doing a great job," you know, and you know, take a little credit maybe for it. One very senior GBC person told me once. He said the secret of being a good GBC person is to manage to take a little credit for all the work, the hard work the devotees do on the ground, you know, at the temples. So it's kind of like that. Of course, you also get to take the blame too if things don't go well. So it works both ways. Anyway, actually, we don't do very much except show up and say, "Hey, great job, folks." Anyway, but going back to today's verse and purport, very nice verse here. It's kind of an interesting little chapter. It's like only about 13 or 14 verses. It's kind of stuck here between different pastimes. And we just finished the prayers of Lord Indra. Now this little story of Varuna comes, you know, it's kind of put in here. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that the reason is that when Shukadeva Swami talked about Indra and how Krishna forgave Indra his transgression against his devotees, it reminded him of the story of Varuna, another demigod who transgressed a little bit against Krishna's devotees, in this case Nanda Maharaj, you know, taking him away, you know, for this very tiny little, somehow an offense about bathing at the wrong time after the fast day or something like that. It's described that it was almost insignificant, but one of Varuna's assistants took Nanda and took him to Varuna's place under the water. And of course, this was all Krishna performs many different activities, many different pastimes with many different purposes. And one of the purposes that was achieved here, obviously, was for Varuna to get an opportunity to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here Varuna is very ecstatic that he has this opportunity to see Krishna personally. This is what he really wanted, and he was very happy. He felt a little bad about taking Nanda Maharaj, but he was treating Nanda Maharaj very, very nicely. He's described Nanda was sitting on a jeweled throne, so it wasn't like he was a prisoner or something there. So, but anyway, he got this opportunity. And Varuna is now saying that the purpose of his life is fulfilled. He's saying that the reason for having a material body, all the trouble of being in this material world, and of course Varuna has to perform so many administrative activities, but this has all been fulfilled. His purpose of life is fulfilled because he's attained the darshan and the lotus feet of Krishna. So it's being described that this is the real purpose of life. This is the reason that we have a material form of body, and particularly the human form of life. So we'll just talk a little bit about that. It's something that Srila Prabhupada emphasizes in many, many lectures and purports because we often don't appreciate it. At least the conditioned soul does not understand the rare opportunity of what this really means, having a human form of life in this material world. Having a material body in the material world can mean two things. It could be an opportunity to try to enjoy this material body, to enjoy the senses, to enjoy the mind separately from Krishna. That was basically our plan in coming here, to rebel against Krishna and be able to enjoy all the material facility, whatever here is to offer, in a way that we think that we are the enjoyer, that we are the controller, and we are separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, we usually find that doesn't work so well. There was a flaw in that plan in that the material world also brings with it an equal amount of suffering along with whatever little pleasure there is. But there's a second result of achieving a material body, and particularly the human form of life, and that's that it gives us an opportunity to cultivate knowledge, to understand who we are, to understand the nature of the material world and the nature of the self, distinct from the body, and be able to understand again our relationship with Krishna and get out of the material world and return to the spiritual world. So we're not going to engage in that process. We're not going to begin that cultivation of spiritual knowledge unless we actually understand this rare opportunity of human life and understand its purpose. I was looking at preparing for this class and noticing that probably of all of our literature, this is discussed probably the most thoroughly in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly in the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj extensively, especially in chapters 5, 6, 7, that whole area of the Bhagavatam, talks about the human form of life, talks about the difficulties that are entailed when one becomes enamored by the material energy and becomes entrapped in the networks of the modes of nature, and also how one can become free from this if one takes the opportunity of Krishna consciousness. There's a nice verse in purport I wanted to read in the 7747. It says, the living entity who has received his present body because of his past fruit of activity may end the results of his actions in this life, but this does not mean he is liberated from bondage to material bodies. The living entity receives one type of body, and performing actions with that body, he creates another. Thus he transmigrates from one body to another through repeated birth and death because of his gross ignorance. So this is the beginning of our understanding. Understanding why we have these material bodies and why we transmigrate from one body to the next. Srila Prabhupada says, the living entity's evolution through different types of bodies is conducted automatically by the laws of nature in bodies other than those of a human being. In other words, by the laws of nature, the living entity evolves from the lower grades of life to the human form. So this goes on automatically. Of course, scientists have this theory of evolution. We actually also believe in evolution, but it's a spiritual evolution. It's not that the material body is mutating and mutating from one form to the other by a combination of, you know, gradual adaptations to environmental conditions, as the scientists would have us believe, but rather there is a spiritual evolution from lower forms of life to higher forms of life that the soul goes through one after another until one reaches that human form of life. Prabhupada continues, because of this developed consciousness, however, the human being must understand the constitutional position of the living entity and understand why he must accept a material body. This chance is given to him by nature, but if he nonetheless acts like an animal, what is the benefit of human life? In this life, one must select the goal of life and act accordingly. Having received instructions from the spiritual master and the Shastra, one must be sufficiently intelligent. So again, that opportunity is given to us. But the free will is also there within the living entity. And it's explained to us that the free will that we have is very minute, but nevertheless, it does act. And we do have that ability to choose our actions. Especially, of course, the living entities who are in plant or animal bodies have very little choice. They're more or less propelled to act according to the laws of material nature, according to the particular consciousness that they receive that's suitable for that particular body. They more or less act according to the modes of nature and progress through their animal life. But once one reaches that human form of life, one of the most critical differences is that choice is available. Choice is available to the human being that is not available to other forms of life. So we have that opportunity to decide whether we want to serve Krishna or to not serve Krishna. Of course, if we don't serve Krishna, then we're serving Maya. We're serving the material nature. And therefore, our choices actually become very limited. People think that they have more choices by turning away from just being a servant of God, but actually when one does that, one's choices become more restricted because one really can only function according to the laws of nature and the dictations of the senses and the mind. When one chooses, makes that choice to serve Krishna, then there's unlimited opportunities there because the spiritual world is unlimited. Where the material world is very limited, we are very constrained. We must act within very strict parameters according to the particular condition of life, according to our past karma, etc. The spiritual world is unlimited, and unlimited happiness, unlimited knowledge, and eternal life is there. For the living entity, once we make that choice to return to our spiritual nature in service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's a mistaken idea that people think that the surrendering process restricts one and limits one and will somehow make one's life, you know, very limited. It's actually quite the opposite. So, unfortunately, most human beings tend to misuse the human form of life. In the Bhagavatam 7:13-27, it said, material sense enjoyment is simply imagination. In this way, the conditioned soul... Why is it imagination? It's interesting. So imagination because we are imagining that we are the body. We're imagining that our existence, our eternal nature, is this body and senses. Therefore, the sense enjoyment that we think we are experiencing is imaginary, because the spirit soul has nothing to do with the material body and senses. Of course, we're inhabiting the body. That is a fact. But the reality of the real nature of the spirit soul is to enjoy spiritually, to enjoy spiritual senses in the spiritual world. Therefore, it's described that material sense enjoyment is imaginary. In this way, the conditioned soul living within the body forgets his self-interest because he identifies himself with the body. Because the body is material, his natural tendency is to be attracted by the varieties of this material world. Thus, the living entity suffers the miseries of material existence. The living entity tries to achieve happiness and rid himself of the causes of distress. But because the various bodies of the living entity are under the full control of material nature, all of his plans in different bodies, one after another, are ultimately baffled. So again, that restriction of freedom of the living entity because one is under the full control of material nature. Just trying to think how much of this purport I should read. Prabhupada says if one does not act for the satisfaction of Krishna, he must be entangled in the reactions of fruitive action. By pious activities, one is elevated to the higher planetary systems. By impious activities, one is degraded to the lower species of life, in which he is punished by the laws of nature. In the lower species of life, there is an evolutionary process, and when the terms of the living entity is imprisonment or punishment is finished, he is again offered a human form and given a chance for himself, in which way he should plan. And if he again misses that opportunity, he again is put into the cycle of birth and death. The Mukhi was just reading today about the importance of spreading Krishna consciousness, of the importance of giving this knowledge of Krishna consciousness. And it is very important because human society must be educated in spiritual life. We are suffering due to the ignorance of spiritual life and ignorance of the nature of material life. The suffering that comes as a result of action and reaction to our past activities, that continues. And it's described by Jiva Goswami that the root cause of that suffering, that cycle of suffering, of action, reaction, of suffering, the root cause is avidya, or ignorance, lack of knowledge. Avidya, of course, is knowledge. So that lack of understanding or lack of knowledge, that avidya is the ultimate source of our suffering. And so that is why it is so important that the living entity becomes educated in the process of Krishna consciousness, the process of understanding a real self. Prahlad Maharaj describes this very nicely, of course, throughout the sixth canto when he's speaking to his classmates. And he says in the very first verse, beginning the sixth chapter, one who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life, in other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary like other bodies, it is meaningful because in human life, one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. In the purport, Prabhupada says, the whole purpose of Vedic civilization and of reading the Vedas is to attain the perfect stage of devotional service in the human form of life. According to the Vedic system, therefore, from the very beginning of life, the Brahmacharya system is introduced so that one's very childhood, from the age of 5 years, one can practice modifying one's human activity so as to engage perfectly in devotional service. This Krishna conscious movement is anxious to serve human society by teaching people to perform devotional service, which can save the human being from being degraded again into animal life. In all of the schools, colleges, and universities, and at home, all children and youth should be taught to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They should be taught to hear the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, to put them into practice in their lives, and thus become strong in devotional service, free from fear of being degraded to animal life. So this Krishna conscious movement is an educational society, and Srila Prabhupada emphasized this many times. He often talked about this as a process of education. Sometimes he talked about this as being a matter of education more than even a religion or more than even a spiritual process. Prabhupada would often say this is the science of self-realization. This is an actual process of learning, of knowledge, because we are understanding the nature of reality. We are understanding the nature of the soul and the nature of our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the source of everything. So this education must be there for the greater society. We must be telling the people in general about Krishna consciousness, giving Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and this knowledge. And we often have noticed that a lot of our preaching from the very beginning of Krishna consciousness has been often directed towards the students or towards the educated population of society. And Srila Prabhupada liked that, and he always emphasized that. He was very happy. We used to have this library party that went around to all the universities, and they placed standing orders of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and they did this to hundreds of college libraries. And Prabhupada was very, very enthusiastic and appreciative that his full sets of Srimad Bhagavatam were being placed in places of higher learning. And even now we see that so many of our programs are very successful on college campuses because young people have their nature is that they are learning, that they are asking questions, that they are inquiring, they are trying to find fundamental truths. At least some of them are. The others, they're out tailgate partying or whatever it is and, experiencing the joys of student life. I think, University. I was just thinking University of Florida regularly ranks in those top lists of top party schools or, because apparently there's quite a bit of alcohol consumption and other such things are going on. But at the same time, there's such a nice opportunity there, and so many students have come from the University of Florida and joined the Krishna consciousness movement. There's just, over the years, dozens and dozens of devotees have come from the University of Florida and the wonderful preaching programs that have gone there, on there, and the Prashadam distribution. And, of course, also preaching is going on at Santa Fe College and so many other places throughout the whole country, actually. So it's very nice to be able to focus on these young people and these students who have an opportunity where they're not so entangled, they're not completely immersed in material life yet. And, of course, this can apply to anybody at every age. There's obviously no encumbrances or no hindrances to anyone taking up Krishna consciousness. But it's often emphasized that if this is done early in one life, then one has a great opportunity. And so Prahlad Maharaj is stating that one should take up Krishna consciousness from 5 years old, from the beginning of one's student life. And so this is another thing that's very, very important for us as far as we have our external preaching, our outreach preaching, but we also have our internal preaching. And so that preaching to our young people, to our youth, and to our children is extremely important. And so, of course, we've always been very fortunate here in Alachua that we've had Krishna conscious schools and we've had opportunities for children to be able to learn about Krishna consciousness. I was thinking how much it's really nice when school starts up again and on Fridays all the students are here and they're, of course, some of the students are here other times as well. But having that opportunity to hear about Krishna consciousness to whatever degree they can understand. Sometimes I know people are thinking, well, children don't understand so much of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the classes, but they do hear something. They really do. And my experience is that the children, over the course of their time as children, by the time they're grown up, they really understand very deeply much of Krishna conscious philosophy. And that's something that sticks with them and becomes part of who they are. They're more or less enculturated in that particular system of understanding. Because in every society, in every culture, the young people learn the values, they learn the ideas, they learn the whole world view of those that are the elders in the culture they're within. So this works everywhere, whether you're in the material world or whether you're in Krishna consciousness. The young people are going to be learning those particular values. So that's why it's so important for us to be able to provide those values and those ideas of Krishna consciousness that understanding from the very beginning of our relationship with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see how young people very easily take it up. They're actually naturally inclined, because the nature of the soul is to be attracted to Krishna. So we're naturally inclined towards Krishna. And we see that our children and young people, they also take up that Krishna consciousness very easily. But we have to provide it for them. We, the adults, have to be responsible to provide that opportunity of giving Krishna consciousness to the young people. And then, of course, taking that Krishna consciousness outside of our community and offering it to the public at large. So this time of year, we always have a lot of extra opportunities, book distribution, Harinams, like that. So we should all really take advantage of these opportunities to be able to give Krishna consciousness to others. Right. So I'll end at that point. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any questions, comments?
I'm not saying I have the answers or anything, but I'm curious, because it seems like most of the ISKCON temples, they're going toward devotees like living off the property, and like there's not much facility anymore, like there's not like brahmacharini ashrams as much anymore, and then devotees have to spend like so much time just to maintain themselves, and like a lot of devotees are already, they've already raised their kids, and they're like at the vanaprastha stage. And so, of course, we have to preach to the young people. Like, they're the future of the movement. But still, I wonder sometimes, like, is there not enough infrastructure for people getting older in Krishna consciousness, or for rides to the temple, or for housing, or I don't know. I just sort of noticed that the trend is to live on the outside, but then there's so many expenses, like it's so expensive, whereas a lot of people would just be happy with like a very, very tiny place.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and it's part of our development of the social and cultural aspects of our larger community and our Krishna conscious movement. And because we're a young movement, relatively speaking, of course it'll be 50 years in 2016 since the formation of ISKCON, but relatively speaking, we're a somewhat young movement, and a lot of the sort of broader culture has not been fully established in Krishna consciousness, although I think that we're seeing that. As far as people living outside more, I think that's probably a natural evolution. Of course, when many of us joined, we all lived in the temple. As you're saying, we were all supported by the temple, and we lived right there. And, you know, in some ways, it was very nice. You know, there were some really advantages of it. Like you said, it was a very simple life. We were able to just concentrate on Krishna consciousness. And, you know, I think a lot of us kind of miss those days a little bit when Krishna consciousness was quite simple and very available. But at the same time, you know, you couldn't last that way forever. In other words, you can't have an entire society living a semi-monastic type of life. It's really not natural. I mean, that type of life is meant in the Vedic culture for student life, for brahmachari life, and for those who are in the renounced order, they can live that way. But householders generally need to be the sort of productive members of society who do make a living, who do support their families, and also support the preaching and the other varnas and ashrams. In other words, the renounced order is meant to be supported by the household order. And so sometimes it's almost been more the other way around. You know, when it really wasn't so good in one sense that the householders were living in the temple and the brahmacharis were out collecting, you know, so it was, you know, but, you know, many things were done on a temporary basis because Prabhupada said, you know, it's like we were like the first wave of the kind of army, the Sankirtan army of spreading Krishna consciousness. So we did whatever we had to do. And now I think we're seeing those things are becoming more and more regularized. At the same time, I think that your point about will we have position for the older members of Krishna consciousness as we go along, that point does definitely has to be looked at. And there does need to be facility. Some things, I'm starting to see more and more awareness of that. For instance, in Mayapur, we actually have a GBC project to develop a a retirement home for older devotees. Because, and of course, many people, you know, have certain facility, particularly if they've had jobs and like that. But we have devotees who have given their whole life to Krishna consciousness, who have, lived in the temple or been brahmachari, whatever, been brahmacharinis, or, you know, who've done, you know, 40 years of service. And then what happens with them, you know, when they are older, when they're no longer so productive, you know, of course, that can be done in many ways, and there can be individual arrangements. But this is just one. This isn't the whole solution for everybody. But this is one thing that we're doing, is trying to develop this facility, which we should start building next year, that will, provide, I think, room for about 120 to 180, older devotees as they're aging and they need to be taken care of. So devotees are starting to think about this. It requires a lot of development. It requires money. It requires thinking and planning, and I think it's a good point to remind us that we do need to make sure that devotees' needs are taken care of, especially as they do enter into the later parts of their life.
And there are even government funds for things like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, there are even government funds, yeah. And some people are going to get their social security or their pensions or
right.
Whatever, stuff like that. So.
Yeah, it's gonna take some organizing, and it's good to start thinking about those things. Anything else? Yeah.
Because the Western Theology Department, they think there is two types of religion society in this world. One is reflective and one is popular.
Hmm.
And reflective means they must be thoughtful, very intelligent, and they must have a conscious choice behind their all the activities they do, not just dance and chant.
Hmm.
But till today, they think the Hare Krishnas are not reflective.
Hmm.
They are kind of like a popular.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was thinking, like I said, no, but Prabhupada wanted everybody to be educated. This is our main. We know what we are doing, why we are doing it now. And then it reflected me that how important the book distribution is, and
yeah.
It should go on more than anything else.
Absolutely. You know, and in fact, wasn't it even a struggle back from the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta, this idea that Vaishnavism was simply a sentimental religion, you know, they're chanting, they're dancing, but is there any really philosophical substance? And of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, particularly, and Bhaktisiddhanta, really emphasized the philosophy and the printing and the dissemination of spiritual literature. And of course, Srila Prabhupada took that up in such a huge way of distributing transcendental literature throughout the world. So yeah, there was the emphasis with the scholars, but also the emphasis of getting that literature out to everyone so they can understand that there's a very, very, very deep, powerful philosophy which is behind the practice. Of course, what's so nice about Krishna consciousness is that the practice and the philosophy mutually reinforce one another. As one, you know, hears and chants and performs devotional service, it purifies the heart and deepens one's understanding in bhakti so that one can understand the philosophy even more deeply. And as one reads and hears the philosophy and the mind becomes more and more convinced, then one more takes up the process of chanting and so both are there. Philosophy and bhakti devotional service, they're inseparable. Yeah. So, again, but Srila Prabhupada definitely wanted this point to be made, you know, that we are a deep philosophical tradition, that we have this spiritual literature, you know, which is, of course, very convincing for the non-devotee. Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhuji. I think that my personal feeling, and I'm always obviously, you know, very critical, but I think that before trying to keep saving the world, we have to try to save our own.
Huh.
And I see that, you know, even though, you know, we're in this huge community, you know, our children, you know, really, you know, they're not going in the right path. Especially, you know, while we live in a community where there is probably more than 500 or 600 grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada, very few Prabhupada disciples compared to that. A handful of Prabhupada disciples that are not in the right state of mind you know, they are helping, you know, deviate some of our own children. You know, so I think that, you know, like for example, if we could collect $300,000 to make that kitchen, you know, I think that if we focus on our children more, you know, then we'll be stronger. You know, the fact that, you know, there is not a place here for women with children to be able to listen to this class in a warm place where the children maybe can make noise and, you know, still the mothers listen to class. It's such a simple thing. I've seen in other temples, like my son, he traveled to this place of the Kashi people, their yoga people. He says to me, wow, man, this place is like Disneyland, so organized, so clean, so neat, and the kids are always a priority. So I have to, you know, express this, you know, to yourself and, you know, to the deities and to Srila Prabhupada that, you know, I think that, you know, we should kind of refocus ourselves in our children because they're the future and they're not growing up Krishna consciousness. It's very, very difficult to have a kid in the Western world, you know. I mean, that's why everybody wants to move to Mayapur. It's so easy for kids to go Krishna conscious, but when we have kids in the material world here and we have to get jobs and we have to be busy in the material life, just to have that balance for children. And I think that, you know, as you as a GBC and all the proper disciples, the senior devotees, I think that we should refocus ourselves. You know, we're making this eco village. Okay, preaching, wonderful. But what about our children? They don't even have a place for the Sunday feast. They don't have a place where they can study and practice these things. So I think that in this temple, we should have a drive, like we just make a kitchen one time in this, and we should make a like, huge drive to do something for the children and the women that they're taking care of the children so we can teach them, you know, how to love Srila Prabhupada and not grow up, you know, thinking that somewhere else is the solution for their lives.
I think your points are well taken, and I certainly completely agree with you about the importance of our children and that they do have full facility, especially to be Krishna conscious. But you made a very important point, is it does really depend upon the adults, the parents, the older devotees have to take that up. I guess I would just say that sometimes we have a tendency to think, you know, or to express it, well, the temple should do A, B, C, D, and E. And sometimes it's, you know, the temple's got a list of about, you know, 157 things it needs to do tomorrow. And, you know, the temple's all of us. And so it's like, you know, we all need to help. We all need to, if something's important. See, the thing is, when you say something like that, you're likely, you know, to end up being head of a committee, you know, or something, you know. So, you know, we'll call upon you and others, you know, to help. Because these things are critical, but we need help. I mean, and, you know, it's like, sometimes it's surprising to realize that a lot of times people have ideas, you know, okay, well, let's do this, let's work on this, but then it's really hard to find the people to actually do it. So I guess all I would say is, yes, I agree with you, but then let's all really, you know, let's really put our energies together and make those commitments to doing the things that are needed to move forward in these areas. The other thing, I guess we also have to look at it from a certain perspective. In one sense, Alachua has done a lot over the years as far as forming schools and having facilities, and that's one reason the community has grown here so much, because there has been a lot of facility for children. Obviously, there needs to be more, I agree, and particularly that it's going to help focus the Krishna conscious aspect of young people's lives. You know, there's lots for them to do, but it's not always the right things, as you're saying. You know, it's not always, you know, the best activity, and we all need to definitely concentrate and focus on that in whatever way we can do. So anyway, I welcome that, and, you know, let's continue discussions on these things, how we can do more. But we should probably end. It's almost 9 o'clock. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.